Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 H1 FY24 conference call of Fedbank Financial Services, hosted by Equirus Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference, please signal the operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shreepal Doshi from Equirus Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Darwin. Good afternoon, everyone. I welcome you all to the earnings conference call of Fedbank Financial Services to discuss the Q2 H1 FY24 performance of the company, business updates, and industry trends. We have the senior management team with us, represented by Mr. Anil Kothari, MD and CEO, Mr. C.V. Ganesh, CFO, Mr. Kuldeep Deshmukh, Head IR, and Mr. Amit Singh. I would now like to hand over the call to Anil, sir, for his opening remarks, post which we can open the floor for question and answer. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Shreepal. Good evening, everybody, and welcome. We got listed on the 30th of November, so this is our first analyst call after that. So thank you all for attending. This is to discuss the results of the quarter ended September 30th, okay? The quarter has been a reasonable one for us. We crossed a landmark in terms of an AUM of 10,000 crore rupees on the last day of the quarter. Our AUM is just about 10,000 crore rupees. This represents a 38% growth over the same period a year ago. This is on the back of disbursals of 2,900 crore rupees in the quarter. This 2,900 crore rupees includes the disbursals for gold and non-gold. The non-gold loan businesses disbursed about 930 crore rupees in Q2. So this 930 crore rupees is a 39% growth over the previous quarter. And all these disbursements happened at a weighted average origination rate of 15.9%. All this led to financials of as follows: Our profit after tax for Q2 was 57.8 crore rupees. This is a 25% growth on a year-on-year basis. Our return on equity was 15.9% for the quarter, and our ROA, or return on assets, was 2.4%. Our small ticket mortgage remains a key focus area for the company, and we expect its mix of the as a percentage of AUM to keep improving year after year. So in line with pursuing this strategy, we opened 23 new branches focusing on small ticket mortgages this quarter. We forayed into the state of Uttarakhand, which is our 17th state in India that we are present in, so our branch count is now up to 607. We added over 200 employees in the quarter, so our employee base at the end of the quarter has increased to 3,970, or 3,970 people. Our asset quality remains on track. Our gross Stage 2 is 2.3%, so that's a worsening of 8 basis points quarter-on-quarter, while our net Stage 3 stands at 1.8%. Our 30+ for the non-gold portfolio has improved marginally to 4.5%. In the quarter, our portion of secured loans continue to stay at 84% of the AUM, even though on an AUF, on an on-book basis, that number is about 13.5%. With this, I'll stop here and open up the call for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Manu Chanda De from MC Pro. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Congratulations on the listing. I just have one question. This is a little broad-based question, not exactly pertaining to the Q2, which is like, you all are present in gold, small ticket housing, business loans, etc., with a significantly higher yields than generally earned by your banking counterparts, including your parent. So now with this, expansion in footprint, riding on fintechs, smaller NBFCs, etc., banks are also, many of the banks, including your parent, is pursuing a strategy of improving their loan yields. In fact, to that extent, there is going to be significant competition from banks because banks now have a big fight with their low-cost deposits and deposits in general. So everyone is eyeing this, high-yielding segment. So how do you differentiate yourself? That is my first question. And secondly, what could you do differently to counter this competition? Thank you.
Thank you. So our mission statement is that we are in business to empower emerging India with easy access to loans. That means we are very focused on the small self-employed customer. Now, the demand in this segment is quite vast, and it's estimated that only 20% of the demand is actually catered to. The remaining just goes a-begging. So the first point is, regardless of how many NBFCs and banks there are, there's a market much larger than the appetite of the existing players to feed this segment. That is point number one. Point number two is that we use whatever information the customer has and whatever collateral he can provide, and we fashion a loan to him on that basis. So some customers have gold, we do a gold loan. Some customers have property, we do a loan against property. So that's the way this thing works. Now the challenge is not just to, we don't have ready-made P&L balance sheets that we have access to that we can put into a model and quickly make a decision. Our underwriting requires us to invest time with the customer, understand his business, estimate the size of his business, his income, and then fashion a loan amount that's a comfortable debt burden for him. So it's very intensive. Okay. So the number of players doing this in the market is very, very small. The large banks most definitely don't do it because they prefer to have models which they can replicate over thousands of branches, and they strive to achieve uniformity in their underwriting practices. That is the other point. Now, the difference in yields between what we get and what the banks get are quite vast. Since you mentioned our parent, our yield on the gold loan business, for instance, is upwards of 17.5%, whereas for our parent, it's about 10.1%. So it's a different customer and a different value proposition that banks and NBFCs offer. Now, the way we are approaching this in future is to cooperate with banks. Okay, there are co-lending arrangements that we put in place, especially for our gold loan business. What these arrangements do is to help broad-base our business so that we are not anchored to customers only give us 17.5%, but we cater to customers at different price points while preserving our returns on equity. We can make our equity go further. We can cater to a wider base of customers. There's superior cost absorption that results as a consequence. So that really is the way forward for us, yeah.
If I just may ask you another question, who all have you partnered with for this co-lending?
There is a large private bank and a foreign bank that we've already tied up with and have commenced co-lending with. So those two arrangements are already afoot, yeah.
So, I mean, just to understand from you correctly, you are not, you still believe that albeit the penetration of the fintechs, etc., the turf that you cater to is going to be exclusive and not going to be, serviced by the banks in the near future. Is that a correct understanding?
So the banks and fintechs are different. The banks cater to a more established self-employed customer base or a salaried customer base. What fintechs in the lending space do is to cater to customers who meet three characteristics. Their loans have three characteristics. It is short-term, it is unsecured, and it is low-ticket. Okay, that seems to be the preserve of fintechs. So that's a segment that we are not present in. You know, short-term, small-ticket, unsecured loans of 10, 15, 20,000 rupees, we are not present there at all.
Got it, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sneha from Star Union Daiichi. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Sneha.
Yeah. Hi. Just we have reached our, we have crossed the landmark of AUM of 10,000 crores. How do you see it going ahead trajectory? Any ballpark number you would like to share? Can we expect any mix changes? And how the percentage sharing would be done? And what is your thought on the dispersal process, more on the gold loan or more on the non-loan gold? And the second question is, there has been spike on the expenses on quarter-on-quarter. Anything to look into that? And third question is on the there is a little spike on the asset quality, basically across stage one as well as stage two on quarter-on-quarter. So just wanted to know your thought. And regarding this co-lending model, how do you see that net securitization volume going ahead? When during the meeting you had mentioned that you would be like to follow your peers in some of these segments, specifically on the co-lending model. So what are the pieces and the work streams we are... These are questions from my side.
You asked four questions. I missed the second one. So let me just answer the remaining three, then we can get to the second. Your first question is on the mix and the AUM and what it may be in future. Now, our business is a business of two parts. Okay, there is the gold loan business and there is the non-gold business. Now, in terms of the gold loan business, we are present in 437 branches. We started the year with an AUM per branch of something like 6.5. We've crossed the 7.5 mark by September, October, and we are on track to increase our AUM per branch, especially with co-lending coming in. The other tailwind that we hope to get is an increase in gold prices. So these are the two factors that will play out in building our AUM per branch for gold loans. Okay. Now, as far as the non-gold loan business is concerned, we have capacity that's already there and our disbursals will keep increasing and the AUM will keep increasing as a consequence. Now, the bias of the AUM will be towards small-ticket mortgages. That's because as we keep originating, this is the longest tenor product that we have. It has a behavioral tenor of something like 7 to 8 years. So while the other products run off quicker, the portfolio will keep getting enriched by the presence of a greater proportion of small-ticket mortgage loans. So that's the way the mix will trend. Now, you've seen our quarter-on-quarter or year-on-year trends in terms of AUM growth, and it will be our endeavor to try and preserve them. You had a question on the co-lending model. How does it work? we've commenced co-lending for gold loans. Okay. And let's say the other bank takes over the loan at 9% and we do a loan at 12%. Thus far, we won't offer the customer a loan. But now what we do is that we offer the customer a loan and offload 80% to the other bank. So we make 3% on 80% of the loan, and on the remaining 20%, we make, let's say, a little more than 3%. Our cost of borrowing is, let's say, 8.6, 8.7. So even if you round that off to 9, we end up making around 15% on the loan. That takes up the ROE quite significantly. That's how co-lending works for us. And we are able to occupy the white space that currently exists in our portfolio between, let's say, 17.5% all the way down to maybe even 10.5%. You know, that becomes ROE accretive for us. So that's how co-lending will work. The third question was with respect to asset quality. Asset quality has stayed largely flat over the previous quarter. There's been a worsening of 8 basis points. That's because there has been some increase in delinquency in the medium ticket mortgage business. So this is as of September 30th. But post-September 30th, that has come back under control. But and I'll have more to say in this in probably the next analyst call. So that is the reason that the stage 3 has bloated by 8 basis points. Your second question I didn't get, Sneha, if you can just repeat.
Yeah, I was just speaking on the expenses side. That has been rise on quarter on quarter. Is due to the IT expenses or any further expenses? What is the reason for the rising expenses, basically?
So our expenses have broadly 4 components, okay, which have contributed to increase. One part of the expense increase has to do with the greater the number of branches we open and the people we hire. Also, in our existing branches, we've had more people. You know, it's not as if our growth only happens to new branches. Even existing branches have room for adding 1 or 2 people. We've added people. So some bit of that is capacity building. That is number one. The second thing is that we're in the midst of a transformative IT implementation in our installment loan businesses. So that is the second thing that is happening. The third is some bit of our expenses have to do with the quantum of origination that we do. As origination increases, there are expense increases that we do. Not everything can be amortized, you know, along the there is some bit that we take in upfront. So that bit of that is the other component of the expense that is there. Yeah.
And when we can expect that operating leverages can be start bearing the fruit of it, considering the implementation of the IT and whatever the branch expansions and the employee addition has been done. But still some of them has been pending on your end. For one, we can expect the core basically on the operating leverages that can play out.
So the investment phase is largely behind us, whether it's in terms of the transformative change in our branch landscape or in terms of, you know, the IT implementation or hiring people. So the platform now is reasonably in place, and any expenses we incur will be largely ad valorem linked with origination. Okay, so the operating leverage should start, and should start right now, if you ask me, and every quarter we hope to demonstrate some bit of this happening here.
Okay, got it, sir, and all the best for the future delivery on the numbers.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Harshvardhan Agrawal from Bandhan Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So two broad questions. One is around the AUM growth. I understand that even the last participant asked about AUM growth. And is that fair to understand that the current growth of around 38% is that we would maintain for the FY 24-25?
So, 38% is a large number. Our endeavor is to ensure that we grow at something between 25 and 30%. That's what I'm happy and comfortable guiding, even though, you know, we have several engines firing in terms of products and geographical presence.
Fair point. Yep. And second, largely on the recent RBI norm changes which have happened. So two parts here. One is any impact on our capital adequacy due to increasing risk weight. And secondly, because it's been almost a month, so obviously we would have had some discussion with the banking partners. So any impact do you see on our cost of funds?
On the first part, we have separated which of our loans have to do with working capital and which of them have to do with consumption. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we've identified these loans, and they amount to something like maybe a 250 or so crore rupees. I forget the exact number. And the impact on our capital adequacy is something like 20 basis points. Okay, so that's the data point. So given that we've just IPO'd and, you know, have capital far in excess of the regulatory minimum, we can take this in our stride.
Okay.
So that is number one. The second question is in terms of the banks. A few banks have come back to us and said that they want to take up their rate. Conversations are underway, but the impact is marginal. The impact is definitely there, but our efforts are to ensure that it's not significant. And my estimate is that it could be something like, God knows, between 25 and 50 basis points maybe.
So this 25 to 50 basis point broad impact, that would be there on the entire bank funding book, right? Because even the existing loans would be repriced.
So, look, we need to see how this plays out, okay? Currently, you know, it's just about three banks who have written to us and we are parlaying, and the increase doesn't seem to be substantial, okay? So it's just an estimate that I have at this point in time now. But yes, in terms of impact, the entire bank loan, bank funding should get impacted, less what we borrowed specifically for PSA.
Fair. Sure. Great. Thanks a lot, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gao Zixuan from Schonfeld. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Am I audible?
Oh, yes, you are.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity and congratulations, good set of numbers. Just a follow-up on the previous participant's question on the borrowing cost. So 75% of our bank borrowing, our borrowings are bank borrowings, right? And out of that, how many percent is, you know, PSL compliant and thus excluded from the risk weight increase on the banking side?
So virtually all the loans that we do are PSL, in that we lend to the small self-employed customer. However, now there are some specific requirements of documentation that we need to collect to demonstrate that they qualify for priority sector lending. Okay, and so therefore only those loans are earmarked for PSL borrowing. I'm just trying to ferret the number for you. Just give me a minute.
Sure, sir.
It's under 10%, yeah.
Under 10% of our bank borrowings are PSL.
That's right.
Okay. So the rest of the 90% of our bank borrowings will be, our lenders were subject to the risk weight increase.
That's right.
Got it, sir. And just on the margins of the spread, right? This quarter, we saw a pretty sharp jump in the, yield. And at the same time, we saw a pretty big decline in the cost of funds. Is there any one-off there? How should we look at the spread going forward, excluding the potential impact of this RBI directory?
All right. So in terms of the spread, I think a fair way of looking at it would be to average it across Q1 and Q2. Our spreads are around the 8% mark. That would be a fair way to look at it. Okay. Across the two quarters, there have been one-offs. In Q1, we have repaid some loans, okay, in the end of the quarter. So when you average it on an opening plus closing quarter by two basis, your borrowing cost looks a little high. So that was the impact in Q1. In Q2, we sold some portfolio down to securitize because we wanted to ensure that we had adequate capital in hand in case the IPO timelines get delayed. So which is why we've had a larger gain in terms of securitization, which adds to the interest income.
Got it, sir. So on the co-lending and the securitization, the spread and the ROA of this off-book AUM, how is that compared to our on-book AUM?
So if you can, I didn't quite get your question. If you can just elaborate, sir.
Yeah. I'm just wondering because it seems that we're doing more co-lending slash securitization, right? So I'm just wondering the spread that we earn on those off-book AUM and also the ROA that we earn on those off-book AUM, how is it comparing to, let's say, our on-book AUM?
All right. I get it. Our cost of borrowing for the last quarter was, say, 8.6%. Okay. The co-lending book we offload to other banks at, say, 9.5%. So the spread then will be about, what, 1% lower. Okay. So 17.5% minus, say, 8.5% would have been 9% on the gold loan book. Instead, we will get 8%. So that's roughly the way to understand it. But there'll be no deployment of capital on this. So therefore, the ROE on the off-book component of the portfolio will be much higher.
Okay. So one percentage lower spread.
Yes.
Basically, on the off.
The way to look at it is we earn 1% less, but we will deploy only 20% of the capital that we would have otherwise deployed on the book.
Got it. And just my last question is on the overall ROA trajectory, sir. We are looking at somewhere about 2.4-ish kind of ROA. So how should we think about ROA for this full year and also next year? Any guidance that we should look forward to, sir?
So you look at us, we've been consistently at 2.3, 2.4 for about three quarters. Okay. Now, henceforth, we will have the benefit of the IPO money, which is about, what, 6 billion rupees. Okay. So that should take our ROA up in the short term. Okay. That coupled with some expense absorption should mean that we should touch or cross the 2.5 mark comfortably.
2.5, exiting this year?
Yes. That's a reasonable estimate.
Got it, sir. That's all from us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Prateek from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen. Congratulations on listing. I have a slightly technical question. So I'm looking at your FY23 annual report, and under the disclosure of your asset quality, there is a certain proportion of loans which are classified under stage two, around roughly INR 7 billion or 708 crores, but they're also classified as substandard. So I have two questions. So first, why are they classified as substandard despite being a stage two? And secondly, if you can help us understand what is the proportion of such loans as of September 2023. Thanks.
So those loans are gold loans which are completely standard, okay, but they have been repledged. So there's a technical reason. The Reserve Bank regulations say that any loan that has got restructured, okay, needs to be classified as substandard. Now, we took a view, and there are many views possible, that these loans which have not got repaid, but instead the borrower has repledged the loan, which means he's sought to renew it, okay, is called a restructured loan. So that bit is about 708 crore rupees out of a total gold loan portfolio of, at that point in time, I think 2,800 crores or so. So we've just disclosed this, that these loans are good, performing, and completely regular, but there is an argument to call them substandard, and which is why we have made that disclosure.
So if I'm understanding is correct, so these are the loans where borrowers have actually defaulted on their payments, right? And there is some kind of restructuring which has been done for such loans, right?
No. It's not restructuring. What happens is the gold loan borrowers are habitual borrowers. They're perennial borrowers. So the way they tend to treat this borrowing is that they come, they close this loan, they open another loan. Okay, and that's the nature of the business, you know, for all gold loan borrowers of NBFCs. Now, these borrowers, what they've done is that they haven't come and repaid their loan entirely, but they've sought to renew their loan. So that's what this is. And as of September 30th, it is 129 crore rupees. Okay, so which number was 700 and something is now about 129 crore rupees. You see this stage 2 of gold loans.
Okay, and they are still classified as stage 2 and substandard.
Correct.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavik Dave from Nippon Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Sir, a couple of questions. One is on one of the previous participants mentioned you answered only 10% of our bank borrowings will get, like, 10% of our borrowings will be PSL compliant, right? Did I get that number right?
It's a guesstimate, it's about 10%, but the exact number I can get back to you, Bhavik.
Yeah, sure. But that number seems to be low, considering we have a large part of our business as gold loans and like small ticket home loans. Generally, most of them like classify as PSL compliant. So I'm just like a little surprised with the 10% number, but we'll be happy to understand the exact number if at all later in the call if you can mention. The second question, sir, is on the operating cost. And when we see our operating cost, even this quarter, it's grown to 34% YOY. Just wanted to understand how are we thinking about operating leverage, right? Because like you mentioned, 25 to 30% kind of AUM growth, I'm assuming similar kind of NII growth is what we'll pencil in. What will be the kind of operating cost growth that we'll be comfortable with? And what is the kind of cost to income or cost to asset ratio maybe 1 year out is what our aim would be?
So the first target is to ensure that we have our income growth ahead of our expense growth. Okay, so that
sure.
is the first milestone that we should cross in a quarter or two. Okay, now our expenses are largely discretionary in that we have people cost and premises cost, but everything else in terms of hiring new people or, you know, opening new branches or paying ad valorem for business that we originate is discretionary. And we will exercise that discretion. So that is number one. The second thing is in terms of cost to income, from here on, it should moderate. Like I said, we have branches in different cohorts of vintage, year one, year two, year three,
right.
greater than year three, and there's a cost to income for each cohort that we track. Obviously, our year one cohorts have the worst cost to income ratio. So
sure.
that is what we will seek to moderate and improve our cost to incomes from here on. We are at what this year we should we are at 60 for the quarter gone by, and I think this is as high as it can get. From here on, it should keep getting better, is my guidance. Yeah. Regarding your first question, I have Ganesh, our CFO, here, who will provide some color and clarification.
Sure, sir. So thanks for your question. I'll try to answer both, but first, you know, see, so far, there was no visible cost advantage or prominent cost advantage for a PSL borrowing versus a non-PSL. So we have been able to get equivalent rates on both.
Correct.
But we do see the opportunity, given now the starker differentiation in risk weight, to get a little more documentation, because as you know, most of our lending, on-lending is MSME.
Right.
So with a little beefing up of documentation for the newer loans we take, we do see, as the situation evolves, we see an opportunity to sort of you know, evaluate a PSL kind of rate on these loans. I think the limited point Anil was trying to make is, so far, given that there was no rate differential or a major rate differential, you know, we did not have that segregation.
Sure.
But that being said, clearly right now with the rules being laid as they are, I think we are better placed than most other players to take advantage of this PSL rule and possibly mitigate some or most of the impact which may occur at on a sectoral level. Okay. Now the second question, I'll just maybe give a minor clarification. See, the OPEX increase you see has been to build muscle and not fat.
Sure. Right.
We have stopped hiring. Or again, as I said, I think we are adequately staffed in all the mid and back office functions.
So right.
Most of the employee cost increases you will see would be towards increasing the tooth-to-tail ratio only. Right.
Okay.
Now, this quarter, for example, we added 23 branches on the small ticket lab side to deepen our presence and penetration in geographies where we saw a larger opportunity from a risk-reward ratio. Okay. Also, we have added 238 odd people on the ground, all front-end sales and credit staff, to avail of this opportunity. So I think also, as Anil mentioned, we are in the midst of a technology transformation exercise. So all of these, consciously, we are aware that while, you know, we have been now put post-listing into a quarter-by-quarter cycle.
Right.
But, you know, there is an investment play which is also there.
Sure.
But that being said, I think much of the platform is built out. We see the drags on account of these coming down in a more pronounced way. And you will see the results of these in the forthcoming quarter.
Perfect. That's helpful. And sir, last question is on system and like what we are seeing in our books. Like, we have a reasonable amount of unsecured business that we've built over the last couple of years. Just wanted to understand, and also the small ticket home loans and other products. Just wanted to understand on the asset quality bit, are we seeing any signs of stress building up in terms of our unsecured business loans, or anything that you want to call out, considering RBI has been talking about the consumption bit of unsecured. Any thoughts on how our book is panning out, any early warning indicators or anything that we're tightening just to be a little more more conservative versus how the market is playing out? Just any thoughts on that?
The two questions you asked, small mortgage and unsecured. Our small mortgage customers continue on an even keel. For them, the stressful event was COVID, and they couldn't keep their businesses open, and there was loss of demand. All that has bounced back. So if anything, they're seeing better times than they did in the past few years. So post-COVID, that has continued to get better quarter after quarter. The portfolio performance will continue to get better quarter after quarter. Now, in terms of unsecured, the Reserve Bank's directions were regarding loans for consumption.
Correct.
Where the loans that we do are exclusively for working capital. Okay. Now, this is colloquially called business installment loans or UBL, unsecured business loans in the market. And these have been in existence for about 25 years, you know, from 97 at least. Okay. So it's a very established method of lending based on the borrower's documented income, okay, and followed by personal discussion and all that. So we do this like anybody else. That's about 13% of our AUF. And those loans, again, are performing better than they used to. You know, there was a COVID-related kind of shock. But after that, you know, they've been continuing to get better. We're not doing consumption, so, you know, we're not impacted, yeah.
So it's fair to assume that the bounce rates in this, like 30 DPD, 60 DPD are like broadly stable, right? Like what we are penciling in for. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, it is. In percentage terms, our 30 plus is exactly what it was a year ago, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sameer Bise from JM Financial Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for giving me the opportunity and congrats on a steady set of numbers. Just wanted to get product-wise yields on an incremental basis versus what were they, say, 6 months or a year back.
Sorry, product-wise?
Product-wise lending rates or yields.
Oh, yields. Okay, here we go. On gold loans, we are onboarding at 1575 versus 16. We are onboarding at 16 versus 1575 a year ago. So that has improved. Our large ticket loan against property, we are onboarding at 12.52 versus 11.42 a year ago. Small loan against property, we are onboarding at 17.5 versus 17.1 a year ago. Business lending, 17.5 versus 16.9 a year ago.
Okay, yeah. That's useful. And secondly, the bump up on the yields this quarter is mainly due to some of the gains on co-lending?
That's right. We sold down some bit of our portfolio, so there's a gain on sale which adds to the interest income line.
Okay, great. That's all from my side. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Prateek from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Sorry, apologies. This is just a follow-up from my previous question with regards to the gold loans which were classified as Stage 2 and substandard. Could you just tell me, are there any provisions created against those?
There are provisions created in line with any Stage 2 gold loan that there is, yeah.
Okay, so no additional provisions being created apart from the, as per the regulation.
That's right. A Stage 2 gold loan, whatever provision is required, is created.
Okay. And apologies, just a follow-up from the previous question. So with regards to the business loans, you said what is the new yield for new originations?
17.5, I think is what I said. Yeah, 17.5.
Versus 16.9 previously.
That's right.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Prateek.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one if you wish to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Akash Jain from Vijit Global Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Congratulations, sir, on a good set of numbers. My question is regarding the guidance for ROA. As you said that operating leverage will kick in and cost-to-income ratio is likely to improve further. So what kind of guidance would you like to give us?
We discussed ROA in response to a previous question. I said that we are at a consistent 2.3, 2.4 over the past few quarters. And with the addition of new capital and, operating leverage kicking in, we should definitely cross the 2.5% mark and it should improve from here on.
Okay. And sir, my second question is, considering the growth, then what kind of capital adequacy do you foresee, say, by FY25, and would you require additional capital?
The landscape is changing quite rapidly. Okay, what we are doing is to try and make our capital last as long as possible. Okay, to this end, we are entering into co-lending arrangements, and we also sell down bits of our portfolio every quarter. Okay, this is to ensure that our off-book portfolio comprises a reasonable part of our overall AUM, so that the capital required is a smaller proportion of the supports a smaller proportion of the AUM than otherwise. So by doing all this, we hope to make the capital last as long as possible.
And sir, what is the expectation in terms of off-book AUM as a percentage of total AUM?
For the quarter ended September, we were at about 14%. Okay, in terms of off-book AUM. So with we've commenced co-lending only after the September quarter. That coupled with our normal sell-down program should take this number up rather than down is what I would guide.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you. I just have a couple of questions. So firstly, since we've done a capital raise, would we still continue with our strategy to have a decent size of off-book, in the overall scheme of things?
Yes, we haven't raised an inordinately large amount of capital. When you look at the landscape, there are companies with a capital to AUM of 30, 40, 50 or even, 60%. So our tier 1 post the fund raise is about 21%, I think. Okay. So our endeavor is to try and make this capital last as long as possible. So you cannot start the off-book strategy and do it one shot when your capital is lower. So we will attempt to do it consistently. That's how we will make the capital last as long as possible.
Got it, sir. So what percentage would we be trying to maintain as a strategy? Off-book loan book.
So we are at 14 right now. Okay, and we will try and take it up rather up from here on. Okay, so maybe we will try and get to maybe 4 to 5 percentage points higher than this.
Got it. So one last question on the loan growth guidance. So for FY25, what is the guidance that we are sort of having, or what is the target that we're keeping in mind?
FY25. So our endeavor will be to ensure an AUM growth of between 25% and 30%. 25% I'm comfortable guiding, and like I said, we have 4,000 people coming to work every day, and we have over 3 lakh customers who can be cross-sold to. So there is a lot of work happening, and we'll try and top that.
Got it, sir. Got it. Thank you so much, sir. That's it from us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Shripal Doshi for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Darwin, once again. Thank you all for participating in the call. And we would like to thank the management of FedBank Financial Services for giving us the opportunity to host this call. Thank you, everybody, and have a good evening.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody, for joining the call. Yeah.
Thank you. On behalf of Equirus Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.